We're talking about the challenges in refereeing youth sports. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kahn. Thanks for being here. The declining number of high school and youth sports referees has been an issue in recent years. And one of the reasons cited for the shortage is the abuse officials face from parents during games. And a study by the National Association of Sports Officials bears that out. It found more than three quarters of all high school officials claim, quote, adult behavior as the primary reason they leave refereeing. So we're looking at the situation in Wisconsin with your thoughts. Are you a referee? What is the hardest part of what you do? Is it the calls, or is it harder to deal with criticism from fans? Have you been a ref for years? What's changed in the past decade? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Barry Mano is founder and president of the National Association of Sports Officials in Racine. He's also publisher of Referee Magazine, and he joins us from our studios in Milwaukee. Barry, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me.
So the number of licensed referees here in Wisconsin had dropped by more than 1,300 since 2003. That was according to the WIAA, the state's youth sports organization. What is going on with that trend in recent years?
It's not only Wisconsin, by the way. It's national because we monitor such things. And so as you said early on in the start of the program about unsportinglike behavior is the main reason that the men, women, and young people don't come into officiating. And once they come in, they leave. I think a stark statistic is this. When 100 people start officiating in year one, at the end of year three, only 30 of them remain in officiating. So 70 have walked away. 70% have walked away. This is something that we're fighting mightily within the officiating industry.
Okay, so who are the outbursts coming from? Is it the parents, the fans, the coaches? What is causing this behavior against refs?
It's clearly coming from the fans / parents, especially at the youth level. If it comes from coaches, we're empowered and it's fairly easy to deal with. If it comes from players, we're empowered and it's fairly easy to deal with. When you have fans acting out in the stands, it becomes much more difficult. That becomes a security issue that goes beyond the sports officials.
Oh, because you can't issue a red flag. You can't issue any type of warning or have even a conversation with that fan because they're not an athlete on the field.
Well, as a technical matter, Kate, you can do that. We are empowered to do that. We're loath to do that because it takes us down a path that's not good. Generally, it can make things worse. I mean, if we identify a fan and ask that fan to be ejected, which, you know, 64% of sports officials have had to do in their careers, had to eject a fan from a contest. We don't like to do it, but increasingly, we are being forced to do that.
But 1 in 7 refs also say they've been physically assaulted. Are physical threats something to take into consideration even here in Wisconsin?
Oh, sure. I don't know why you say even in Wisconsin. We're not exempt from any of the national trends. The culture is the culture. The whole thing about assaults, assaultative behavior, verbal assaults is something that we talk about in the dressing room before we go out and work a contest. We didn't used to do that back in the old days. We were really not concerned about that, but now it's part and parcel of the pregame conferences that we have with each other before we go out to work a contest. We want to know where we're going to be, if we need to exit in a hurry, which end of the floor or the field or the diamond are we going to exit, where is game security. We want to know where the game security person is and what the person looks like before we go out there and work. That's where we find ourselves today.
We're talking with Barry Mano, president of the National Association of Sports Officials based in Racine. You can join in. Are you a ref or a student athlete or a parent? Why do you think Wisconsin is struggling to find referees for youth sports? And why is this an issue straight across the country? Join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Let's go to Sam now in Wausau with thoughts on this. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how you guys doing?
Good.
Yeah, I'm a youth sports director in Wausau, and I just wanted to touch base. I know we're talking about a lot of competitive type stuff. I actually fall more in the non-competitive realm. I'll do reffing for adult and high school leagues too. I think there are diamonds in the rough, so to speak, and there's people out there who get it still and understand and respect the difficulty in reffing and supporting youth sports programs, but I definitely see it, and that it's just kind of a point the finger at whoever is in front of you mentality nowadays, and at times it's the ref. He's standing right there in the middle of the field, and if it's not him, it might be the coach, but we don't really own our problems like we used to, like I remember, and instead we want to blame the faults of maybe a lack of playing time or a lack of performance on whoever else is standing around.
And Sam, some
of the things that we can affect as families.
And Sam, I might have missed it here, but what sports do you ref?
Soccer, volleyball, basketball, and flag football. I'm a youth sports program director at the Y, so I'm doing all the core sports, really.
And for those volunteer reffing situation, do you find it kind of a calling for those people?
Yeah, I think there's plenty of people who are still love all the sports and enjoy delving into that. Whether it's I got high school refs all the way up to adults, 50, 60, even 70-year-old refs, and there's people who are confident in their ability, but there's a lack of those people now who are confident to sit in the field, in the middle of the field, and make a call when it matters.
Barry, I
just don't see as many people. Who's going to put themselves on the line and do that, and especially for, low or little to no pay.
Yeah, Barry, what are your thoughts there on what Sam is saying? Not finding enough people to really make those hard calls.
Well, Sam made a really important point, which is this undertaking is difficult, and that's part of the lure of it. It's sort of like back in tribal society when you would walk barefooted over the hot coals to produce something and prove something. Today, refereeing can be walking the coals because of the nature of it, but that's the fun of it also. You have to be willing to undertake the difficulty. I think the challenge is the love of sports doesn't equate to the love of officiating. It's not the same, and I think many people just sort of think, well, you love sports, why don't you go in and try refereeing? That's not going to work today. We're in a different world. The level of professionalism, the level of accountability, and the level of publicness in what we do requires a different ocular for somebody who's going to do this and do it on a sustaining basis. It takes a lot of work to be an effective sports official. It's not a throwaway. It's not like a sunroof on a car. We're not an option to the product line known as organized sports. We have to at least be one of the tires, and in some cases, maybe even the steering wheel. So it raises the bar on what's expected for people going in and doing this, and that makes it harder for people to commit to it.
What is the situation like on the pay front, how refs are paid?
It stinks. What can I tell you? I had a speech in Spokane last week at our national conference, and I was making the point that many people and many organizations go on and on about how important sports officials are, but then there's no real investment being made in it. How can you expect people to go out and work a game for $30 or $40 a game and take all the time to, from, and during and expect that that's going to work? At some point, somebody has to get real on the economic side. Keep in mind, sports officials get compensated in a combination of two ways. One is money income, and the other is what I call psychic income. And when you have unsporting-like behavior, to me, that's negative psychic income, which lowers the overall compensation package for people to come into this. So we have to find a way to compensate people more fairly that are going to be serving as sports officials.
Talking with Barry Mano, president of the National Association of Sports Officials, that's based in Racine. You can join in 800-642-1234. Are you a ref? What do you love about the job? What is your challenge? Are you a parent or a coach who does take issue with referees sometimes? How do you handle it? Call in 800-642-1234. Back in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the challenges of officiating youth sports and high school sports in Wisconsin. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Surveys of referees indicate that fan behavior is getting worse, and that may be why there is a recruitment problem The National Association of Sports Officials is based in Racine, conducts nationwide surveys that found a third of sports officials say they've feared for their safety before or after a game. So what has changed in the climate for refs? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. Barry Mano stays with us, and he's the head of the National Association of Sports Officials. Let's go back to the phones now with Mike joining us from Madison. Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you? I agree with Barry on a lot of things. I'm a 30-year official. I've worked youth on up through college. But I think there's something we as officials can do, and we're not doing right now. Barry's correct. We have the power to deal with sportsmanship on the court or on the field. And I can tell you there is an epidemic of officials who will not deal with that. And I'll tell you, fans and parents, you can go to any game. I've worked games. I've watched officials because I help train officials. When they allow, as I've seen this past season, seven different times I saw young men or young women swear on the court, either at an official, at a coach, or another player, not get penalized. I've seen coaches in basketball come out into the court, since high school has allowed the coaches to stand up, screaming at the officials. No technicals, never dealt with. If you want to deal with the problem, and we have to deal with the problem on multifacets, you have to get officials back to doing what our job is. Yes, the pay is crap. But you know what? When you go out there and you're given the rule book, you're told to enforce the rules. We need to do that. If you start setting the tone in some of these sporting activities of what's permissible on the court by coaches and players, I think it will help some, not all, will help some in getting parents and fans back in line. Because what parents and fans see is that that stuff's going on in the court. It isn't getting addressed, so then they get actively involved in the game, and that's never good.
Oh, so it bleeds over there. Mike, thanks. Barry, should refs be ejecting more people? What about decorum?
Mike makes a really good point. We need to do our job better. We need to have more courage in what we're doing. But by and large, we don't own the game. So those who own the game, in quotes, those who own the game need to say, this is what we want the game to look like. And then they turn to us, the sports officials, who are in the enforcement division, and our job is to carry it out. Now, we do have some less than courageous sports officials. That's true. But also, there's been courageous sports officials, and they've never been backed up by the organizations. When we put a hard line in the sand, then we get castigated, we don't get more games, and we get berated. So it's a difficult thing. The people who own the game have to stand up and say, we are going down the wrong path, and we are not going to permit this kind of behavior, and we are going to empower the referees to get stronger in their enforcements, and the referees will do that. But they have to believe that they're going to be backed up.
David now in Middleton. Hi, David.
Hi.
What's on your mind here?
Well, I just wanted to relate a couple of things. One is I coached youth soccer back in the day, and so things may have changed since then, but we used a lot of young people as refs. So in other words, we might have under six or under eight soccer players, and the refs might be 12, 13 years old. And what we found was that when they were castigated by fans or by coaches, oftentimes what they would do is not retaliate or respond, but often they would give up reffing after just one season. So I think that could certainly contribute to the shortage of refs. Basically, if it's, earlier I heard the term psychic rewards, I think that certainly would apply. The other thing I found was that really successful coaches whose teams prospered and where kids were happy playing, rarely, if ever, did they confront refs. They focused on their game, and I thought that was just really valuable to learn.
David, thanks for those thoughts. Barry, what do you hear there?
Well, good points being made. We're not at war with coaches. What we're at war with is that the game doesn't get played by the rules. That's our main job. And so if we have coaches that help in that process, we brought up about profane language when Mike called earlier. Well, what do you do if you're a youth basketball official and what you hear in the huddle is bad language and the coach is doing nothing about the bad language in his own huddle? We're supposed to take care of his problem when the game's going on? That's shifting responsibility. Sports officials pick up on those kinds of things. if that's allowed. If you have fans close to the benches at a game, at a youth game, football, basketball, soccer, and they're hurling epithets and obscene language and nobody's doing anything, you're looking at us? We're supposed to be the main security force in that environment? I don't think so.
Barry, let me ask you this. How does the referee shortage vary between urban and suburban and rural communities? Do you see any differences there?
Well, it's really where you have the most games, which would be in the urban areas because that's where the most schools are. What we find is it really varies across the country geographically and by sport and by level. So certain places you'll have a huge shortage of football officials, but not a shortage of basketball officials. So really the main problem, I mean, you've always had a problem of not enough refs in far-flung areas where you have to drive, you know, 80, 90, 100 miles, 200 miles to work a game. It's never been easy to fill those spots. So the main challenges are really urban and suburban.
Let's bring in Tom now in Platteville. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Sure.
First of all, I want to thank Barry and all of our officials. You guys and gals are the lifeblood of our athletics. I'm an athletic director in the southwest part of Wisconsin. But I did want to speak through the pay for officials. We've noticed with the shortage, and we're all feeling it, that officials really have a lot of leverage in pay right now, and I can tell you at most of the schools in our area and my conference, we're now paying $60 plus mileage for middle school level officials per game, and in a lot of sports we're now over $100 per game plus mileage. So yeah, I've heard a few guests and callers talk about how the pay is crap, but to me some of that's getting pretty good for officials, and I think it's a great opportunity for young people and new officials to make excellent side income, especially like college students who might have some interest.
Tom, thanks so much. Sounds like Tom is saying, you know, there are a lot of other benefits here that are not being taken into account, like some refs are getting that mileage, and this could be a side hustle.
Oh, this is great. I mean, I started, my dad started my older brother and me in officiating, and that was our part-time job, which sure beat, you know, working in a food store or a drugstore chain or something. You go out and referee and make some money. And the point just made is very good. There are certain schools that are finally stepping up. There are many places. Good example, let's just take Louisiana, the whole state of Louisiana. The officials in that state, the high school officials, have not received a raise in pay in 12 years. The same thing is going on in Florida. I can reel those off. So there are certain pockets that are finally getting it, and they're starting to increase the compensation. Hey, look, the referees don't want to withhold their services. We didn't get into this to do a job action. We got into this to referee the games and help sports. That's what we really like to do. But if we get the disrespect of never even hearing in 10 or 12 years or 6 years that the compensation is going to go up, then you're forcing this group of people to take some action that they really don't want to take but are being forced to take.
We have time for one quick call. Russ in La Crosse. Hi, Russ.
How you doing?
Good.
My comment is with the national sports networks covering, like, you know, some high school sports and the glorification of this you know, win at all costs attitude. I mean, you have college recruits that start following these kids in seventh, eighth grade sometimes. Do you think that exposure has helped to embolden, you know, coaches, players, and parents and fans to be more critical of referees?
Barry?
I think the answer is yes. I think it's about me versus we. But we referees are able to handle this. We have the tools, and we're very good at what we do. If you look at any of the numbers, even before replay, we were accurate when we blew the whistle or threw a flag roughly 92 to 93% of the time. We've increased that now with replay. So we're doing a very good job of enforcing the rules. How the culture changes is okay with us, as long as it's within the boundaries of the rule book, and we can handle that.
Last few seconds with us, what is being done to recruit more referees?
Well, the main thing we have found through the survey is the way the most people come into sports officiating is when they're asked by somebody to come in. It's not through poster programs in schools, and we need to do all that. We need to have poster programs and go to job fairs and things like that. But the main way people come in and stay in officiating is if somebody in officiating asks that person to come in. That's one of the hallmark results of the NESO Historic Survey in 2017.
Barry, thank you so much for joining us.
Enjoyed it. Thank you.
Barry Mano is founder and president of the National Association of Sports Officials, publisher of Referee Magazine, and he joined us from our studios in Milwaukee. Coming up, from concussions to conference changes, we look at some of the biggest challenges facing youth football in Wisconsin. Did you decide not to enroll your child in football recently? How did you arrive at the decision? Does your child play football? How do you make sure your child stays safe on the field? We're at 800-642-1234 for you to join in. Back with that conversation right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at youth football here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The number of high school athletes who participate in football continues to decline, with concerns over injuries, concerns over cost, other factors as well. The National Federation of State High School Associations tracks this data. More than 20,000 fewer high schoolers played football in 2017 than the year prior. Over a decade, that looks like football participation being down nearly 7%. With about a million high schoolers suiting up nationwide. We're looking at youth football scene here in Wisconsin with your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Did you decide not to enroll your kid in football recently? How did you arrive at that decision? Does your child play football? What do you think about injuries? Call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Zach Rastel is a sports reporter for the Juneau County Star-Times. Zach, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
And Kurt Hogg is here. Kurt covers high school sports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Kurt, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks. Good morning to you as well.
Well, Kurt, the state's athletic association allows high school football practices to start this very week. What do participation rates look like for high school football right now?
Well, we're not entirely sure about this year. A lot of coaches or a lot of teams aren't going to put out their numbers yet, and so those haven't quite been published. But looking back to the last couple of years, going back to comparing the last couple of years to what it was 10 years ago, which was actually the peak for the state, it's down about 23% in 11-man football in Wisconsin. Now, some of those teams have some schools have gone to 8-man football, which probably drops that percentage to about 20% decline. But yeah, that's where we're at right now.
Kurt, what seems to be driving that decline? What's going on?
I think there's a variety of factors. Obviously, the one that comes to mind first is concussions. Whether that's what's out there in the news, or it's the most drastic cause for that. At least the one that comes to your mind, the first one. It's concussions. It's safety. It's parents and families that don't necessarily want their kids to play, but there's other factors in there as well, as including other sports, specialization of sports.
Oh, because when you play football, you just focus on football.
Yeah, and that's becoming a more and more prevalent theme around not just the state but the country, and it's not just kids focusing just on football. I would say that there's probably a lot of other sports that have kept kids from playing football, and not just football, but maybe you've got a very talented basketball player who grew up playing baseball, but now he plays basketball year round, so he doesn't play baseball, doesn't run track, doesn't play soccer. There's a variety of different ways you could spin it, but a lot of specialization is happening now, as opposed to maybe where we were 20 years ago.
And Zach, we were talking just earlier about the state's referee shortage and the abuse that referees are getting from coaches and parents and what it feels like on the field for them. Could that play a role in why fewer kids are signing up for football?
It certainly could. It's, you know, you go to a lot of these games sometimes, and you're covering these games, and there are a lot of fans, a lot of parents who are just incredibly intense, probably a bit too intense for, you know, what's ultimately just high school football, what's supposed to be fun. And for some kids, it might just be, you know what, this isn't worth it. This isn't worth all the yelling and all the, you know, sometimes verbal abuse you get from fans. And, you know, there's better things they could be doing with their time.
Have we lost sight of the fun, Zach? Are these games getting too intense?
Sometimes it does seem like that. Not always. You know, there are certainly plenty of fans that, you know, they're able to keep things in perspective. But every now and again, when I'm covering games, sporting events, whether it's football, basketball, baseball, whatever else, and you just get intense moments, you get blown calls for referees or a player screwing something up, and you're just kind of taken aback by the sort of vitriol that gets yelled at from the stands.
Kurt, you mentioned eight-player football, which is one way that high school teams are coping with the shortage of players. How common is eight-player football across our state?
Yeah, so the state was up to 30 teams, I believe it was, last year, and Zach could probably correct me if I'm off on this, because I'm sure that he's in covering a fair or sees a bit more of it up where he is in Juneau County. But yeah, it's up from, I believe, 19 or 20 teams of just a couple of years ago. So a lot of schools that have declining enrollment in general, in addition to declining football numbers, it makes a lot of sense. You can still field the team, and you don't have to try to compete with the bigger schools. And, yeah, it just works out well.
Zach, is this what you're seeing as a trend among smaller schools?
Absolutely. There's eight-man football at the beginning of this decade in Wisconsin didn't exist. And then 2013, there was 19 teams that started playing. It's up to, I believe, is projected to be 42 eight-man teams this year and then up to nearly 50 next year. So we've seen a steady increase, and even just last year was the first time that the WIAA has held an eight-man football state tournament, and so that creates a bit even greater incentive for teams that might be on the fence about dropping down to eight-man. Now that you know that there's a state tournament to be held, you think, oh, well, we can make the jump, and the WIAA also plans in the future to, once there's enough teams, to expand that playoffs to 16 teams.
Yeah, how is that state tournament on the eight-player football landscape? How is that being taken in by fans and schools?
Well, I definitely think that it's, as I mentioned, a much greater incentive to want to participate in eight-man football, because while teams did participate before there was a set state tournament, you know, it kind of, your season kind of ends not very dramatically when you're some of the better teams. And now that you have like an actual state tournament and a state title to play for, you know, it's a slightly different game than 11-man football, of course, but it's still, now you're playing for a state title just like everybody else.
We're talking about the challenges facing youth football with a couple of reporters. Kurt Hogg is from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Zach Rastel is from the Juneau County Star Times. You as well, 800-642-1234. Are you a parent or a coach or a student athlete? What do you think about youth football today? What issues do you think schools or the state's athletic association should be working to address? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. So, Kurt, if schools can't find success with an eight-player team, there's also this option of forming a co-op with another school. How does that work?
It's a fairly common thing across sports in the state where two schools merge together and their athletes combine to play on the same football team. The coaching staff comes from one of the two schools. They practice at one of the two schools' facilities. And, yeah, it works in the same way that you know, they compete at the same exact, in the same exact manner that, you know, your one school teams do, but they're just combined, and you have to combine their enrollment to determine what level or what division they'll play at in the playoffs. So if you have two schools that are each 300 kids, that'll be 600 kids, obviously, and then they'll be competing with like schools in terms of size, as opposed to the smaller size of the individual schools that make up the co-op.
Zach, what are you seeing on co-ops? Is this something we're seeing in different pockets of the state?
I'm not sure if it's particularly more common in one area of the state, okay. But it's definitely among smaller, more rural schools. It's definitely becoming a more popular option. I know in my general vicinity of the state, South Central, Southwest, you're seeing more and more co-op teams just because, you know, the numbers are getting too low. And even some years you have some schools that, from year to year, sometimes they have enough to field a varsity team. Other years they don't. And to kind of take out the, you know, the uncertainty of whether or not next year you're going to be able to field a team, if you go the co-op route, it kind of, you know, there's more consistency in the numbers.
Are there some potential drawbacks of forming a co-op? Have there been any obstacles you've seen as schools try to join forces?
Not particularly. Not to jump out of mind, but there are things like, you know, that's a lot of times there's one school in particular that hosts most of the games, so that can, for the other schools in the co-ops, the other fans, players, you know, that can involve more travel. And, you know, there's sometimes it feels like something's being taken away when the home games aren't being played at your school in particular. But I'd say on the whole, you know, the benefits certainly outweigh any negatives that may exist.
Kurt, let's look at the cost. What do we know about the cost of running a high school football program? How expensive is it for schools to maintain a program?
Yeah, it's running a football program is not cheap. And in almost every case, you're not going to be generating. I mean, these aren't revenue generating programs. This is not college football. So the costs are significantly outweighing the revenue in most cases, although it is the state tournament is a big generator of money for the WIAA, and that makes up for the money it loses in many other sports for holding those tournaments. But specifically on the individual high school level, it's not cheap. I mean, it can run you up to six figures in some cases, and it all depends on the school budget and how much each one allocates. So, I mean, in certain more affluent areas where the teams are successful and it's a part of the entire culture, there's a lot of, for instance, in our area, the Milwaukee area, a lot of the Waukesha County schools will spend more on their football programs. But yeah, it's a lot.
Where is the money going to? I mean, what is the most pricey thing for running one of these programs?
Equipment, the new fields, although that's oftentimes covered by referendums. Technology, teams are getting, you know, iPads and all those new things. Yeah, coaching staffs aren't cheap. You got to pay your coaches, and you want good coaches, so you have to. So that can be competitive as well. You know, you don't want to lose them because you're not paying them enough. And so, but you know, you add all these things up, equipment's not cheap, and it tacks up quickly.
We're looking at the issues surrounding youth football with Kurt Hogg, who covers high school sports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and Zach Rastel, who is a sports reporter for the Juneau County Star Times. Are you a high school football coach? What are some of the biggest struggles you see in this game? What do you think of the new way high school football conferences have been organized? Join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in just a moment. More conversation here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the challenges surrounding youth football, high school football, here in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. High school sports participation increased for the 29th consecutive year, led by an increase of more than 15,000 participants in girls' sports. And that's according to the most recent data available from 2017. But we also are seeing this nationwide decline in participation in football. We're looking at the situation here in Wisconsin, gathering your insights as well at 800-642-1234. What are some of the biggest struggles you see facing football? What do you think of the new way high school football conferences have been organized? Are you a parent? What are your concerns about your child in football? Join in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Kurt Hogg covers high school sports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He stays with us. Zach Rastel is here. He's a sports reporter for the Juneau County Star-Times. Let's go to the phones now. Mike joining us from Fall Creek. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What's on your mind about high school football?
Well, I played in grade school football, 7th and 8th grade. That's when they started back then. And I played through high school and a year in college. And I know from experience I've had, you know, a few head injuries, you know, taken out of the game because I didn't know what quarter it was or what day it was. So my grandson is 11 years old. He's already played 4 years team sports, and he lives in Colorado. But last year and the year before, they played a total of 13 games. And I mean, I love football, but I think we glorify it too much. And my concern is, you know, my grandson's having head injuries and the effect that's going to happen later on, especially when they're at such a young age and developing.
Well, Mike, let me ask you this. Do you have any regrets as you look back at your football career? Because it lasted a long time.
Yeah. I have no regrets of playing. Mm-hmm. And the only time I had any joint injury was in college. And that was playing intramural soccer. I blew my knee out. So, you know, soccer can be very hazardous, too. Yeah. But I just think, you know, parents, schools need to take a look at, especially the young kids, you know, playing that many games. Hold on 1 second.
Well, let's get Kurt to respond here. Mike is saying, you know what, we glorify this game, and now he's looking at it through the lens of his grandchild playing 13 games last season.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some validity to the idea that it is glorified. But at the same time, I mean, there's a lot out there now that all the facts are out there about the dangers of concussions, and almost to a certain degree, the average person will overestimate the number of concussions suffered. So it's a bit of a balance there, actually. I mean, football, you look at it across the country, and it's, you know, you got youth kids playing 13 games a year. That's probably on, you know, the far end of the scale a bit too much. But at the same time, you also have people that maybe overstate some of the wide sweeping effects. So it's kind of interesting that you have a bit of both sides of the coin there, I think.
Well, Zach, let's look a little closer here at concussions. A new study looking at youth football practices in an effort to address concussions 5 years ago, the WIAA, that's the state's high school athletics association, placing stricter rules on player hits. And now a study says concussions fell dramatically after these rules were in place. Can you help us understand how the WIAA restricted player hits?
Yeah, so what that rule change did was that it limited the amount and the duration of full pad practices that teams could conduct. And there was some opposition to it at the time because there were some coaches that felt that this would lead to more sloppy play during the actual season, which could lead to more injuries. But the study really didn't show that to be true. The concussion levels have dropped by 57% since the rule change. So that's obviously a great sign, and, you know, for the viability of football moving forward, if it wants to stem the decline, you know, it's, things like that have to happen.
Has there been, Zach, any opposition to the limits from a player's perspective, coaches, parents?
I don't think so anymore. I think, you know, when it first started, there was, you know, concerns that there was it was going to adversely affect technique once the actual games are played. But I think now that that rule has been in effect for, this will be its fifth year now, that, you know, that hasn't happened, that the concussion levels have gone down, and that I think on the whole it's seen as a positive rule change and a positive development.
Kurt, how have you seen schools respond to concerns over concussions? What are they doing differently than they were 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, yeah, so, I mean, first and foremost is that new, or I guess it's not new anymore, but the WIA rule about full pad practices. I think one of the main things is schools are, I mean, they're just very cognizant of it. If kids are banged up during practice, if they're feeling lightheaded or dizzy, you're sitting out. I mean, it's become a lot more, there used to be a lot more leeway with coaches and athletic trainers, and, you know, maybe it's a very talented kid and he's, you know, he's a bit iffy coming into Friday night, and it's, you know, he can, it would be a lot easier to sweet talk your way into playing almost. And nowadays, I think you're seeing more kids that doesn't necessarily fly. You have to pass the protocol. There's no strict, you can't enforce that concussion protocol as much as, say, in the NFL, where, you know, it's just a much, much more tightly run institution. But yeah, it's just been taken more serious by coaches, by players. I don't want to say it's been taken more serious by trainers, but I think they have a little more say and a little more power to make kids sit out.
Well, speaking of trainers, Kurt, a Dane County Youth League recently started requiring a medical technician or an athletic trainer to be on the sidelines for every game. How common is that?
In terms of below the high school level, I'm not entirely sure. Mostly for our jobs, we stick to the high school stuff. But in high school, you know, there's an athletic trainer on both sidelines at every game, and they are watching very closely. And yeah, they're not there to mess around. And I think it's important to have it, not just at the high school level, because if a kid starts sustaining concussions before high school, that could be incredibly detrimental, especially if they keep playing. Those effects will only get worse as time goes on.
Zach, what are you seeing in more rural parts of the state in terms of athletic trainers being on the sidelines and watching for injuries and being able to respond to what happens on the field?
Yeah, as far as I can tell from the games I've been at, you know, the same thing as bigger schools. There's an athletic trainer on every sideline. They're watching very closely. As Kurt mentioned, we're collectively as a society much more cognizant of concussions and what the, you know, head injuries and how detrimental they can be. So a lot more trainers have more power now, and there's a lot more erring on the side of caution. Like if somebody looks like they got their bell run pretty bad, you know, they're getting pulled out just to be safe, even if they don't have a concussion.
So, Kurt, are any districts getting rid of their football programs altogether due to declining participation or for other reasons?
Yeah. I mean, we're down 43 participating schools in 10 years in Wisconsin. Now some of those have gone to eight-man, so you're probably down about 15 to 20 participating schools in that time due to the reasons that you kind of just mentioned there.
Zach, when you look at those declines in the number of teams, do you feel like that impacts the sports climate here in Wisconsin for high school?
I think so. You're seeing, you know, as football has decreased, and part of it, you know, some of that decrease might just be because football was a booming sport for so long and they had to decline at some point. But in that same general time span in Wisconsin where football participation has decreased a lot, you've seen, like, boys soccer participation's increased by about 3%. So it's, you know, football is still, among boys, still the most popular sport by a pretty wide margin. But, you know, it's going down, and it's probably going to continue to go down for the foreseeable future.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Kurt Hogg covers high school sports for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Zach Rastel there. He's a sports reporter for the Juneau County Star Times. Coming up in On Point, a remembrance of the celebrated author Toni Morrison, who has died at 88. Also, Americans with health insurance are increasingly turning to charity to help pay their medical bills. We'll unpack what's happening. That's On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.